Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Have you ever felt triggered or flooded as a mom while parenting? Or just a human being around other humans? Today's topic is going to help you. Let's keep calm and mother on. Mothering is way too important to do alone and way too serious to be serious all the time. My name is Christy Thomas and I am here shoulder to shoulder with you. Mothering and enjoying life together. This is the podcast where you can focus on being mindful and taking a deep breath with me and learning new things so you can pause and savor the amazing life you already have. Today's guest, Jen Lumanlon, holds a master's in science in psychology, child development, and a master's in education, and hosts the Your Parenting Mojo podcast, which is a reference guide for parents of children under the age of 10 based on the scientific research and principles of respectful parenting. In each issue, she examines a topic related to parenting and child development from all sides to help parents understand how to make decisions about raising their children. She lives in California with her husband and daughter. I am very excited and very grateful that Jen Lumanlon can come back. This is my second time recording with her, people. The first episode didn't make it because I had a recording glitch, and I am glad she could come back again. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks so much for having me back, Christy.
I'm so thankful that you're here because I can't wait to talk about mothering with you, because your parenthood story is a really interesting one to me. Tell us who you are first, and then I'll ask my big question.
Sure. Yeah. My name is Jen and I host the Your Parenting Mojo podcast, and it is research-based information to help kids thrive. Started out by looking at psychological research on parenting, child development. I kind of wanted to know what does the body of literature say on a topic that I was thinking about, rather than what does the one study say that makes it into the news? and does that refute or really sort of reinforce the last 10 years of research on that topic, or 30 years in some cases? And couldn't find a resource out there that did that already, and so decided to create it myself.
So you were tired of sound bites in parenting.
Yeah, I would get these emails from a baby-related website that shall remain unnamed that would say something like, five ways to tell that your child has a developmental delay. And of course it's clickbait, right? And they just want you to see their ads on their page. But I wanted to know, like, really, where does the research sit within the whole body of work? And there was nobody out there who was doing that. You know, the vast majority of people who are looking at academic research will maybe read the abstract, or they'll read the press release that came out, where the person who's putting together the press release read the abstract. And so you're getting things like five things removed from the actual study.
It's telephone. It's the telephone game.
Scientific telephone. And maybe the original author really heavily caveated the results and said, yeah, it's like this, and it's just about statistically significant. But the way they wrote it in the abstract really kind of reinforces how big it is. And everybody jumps on that. And all of a sudden, you're getting something that seems way blown out of proportion than what the actual study found.
That's super interesting. So you're a mom to a daughter. Mm-hmm. And so is that you were getting these emails and you were curious. Was parenting, mothering natural to you?
No, funnily enough. Yeah, I had no parenting instinct whatsoever. I didn't like children. I didn't want to have children. no desire for it to happen whatsoever. And my husband would, he was the one who really wanted a child. And I would say, you know, do you want to do this thing? And he was like, oh, we should just get to the end of bike season. And then the end of bike season would come around. It's like, do you want to do this thing? Oh, we should just get to the end of ski season. And of course, ski season is followed by bike season is followed by ski season. It's like, well, if you never want to do it, that's fine with me. That's completely fine. But if you want to do it, you should probably say. And so he said, well, if it happens, I'll be ready. And so I made the decision.
Yeah.
And it happened.
So there we go. And then you were had this baby, this wonderful baby, and mm-hmm. no instinct about what to do, which is so curious to me. As someone that, like, I chose to be around kids from, like, age 12 on. Like, I was the primo babysitter and then went to be the after-school care person and studied elementary education.
I worked at a bakery.
like kids were kind of my niche passion. Like, I was so curious about kids and self. But it didn't. Motherhood was super confusing. I had failure to thrive babies, and I totally had no clue how to feed them well. But that's how we all got here. And I'm so glad you went to school and decided to show us the science of these clickbait.
I already had a master's degree in environmental management by that time. And I was like, well, I know how to research. I don't have any skills here. I don't have anyone, you know, any parents really to model this stuff off. But I know how to research. And so I got another master's in education and another one in psychology focused on child development. And that sort of helped me to see that I wasn't leaving anything big out and really framed up the way that I started the podcast.
That's awesome. So one of the things you talk about is about when parents are parenting and they get triggered by a situation, right? There's a lot of situations with our kids where our bodies respond or our emotions respond. So can we talk about that?
Yeah, yeah. And I like to try to be really specific with the terminology that we're using because we sort of hear the word triggered being thrown around a lot online these days. It actually has a really specific meaning. It means, it comes from a post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis, and it means a difficult reaction that you're having right now that's out of proportion to what actually happened, that's really based in a trauma that you've experienced, that what's happening now is reminding you in some way, subconsciously or consciously, of that trauma that you've experienced. And the other, if we haven't experienced significant trauma, then we can still feel flooded, which the physical experience of it feels very similar, right? We're still having this huge reaction, maybe exploding, maybe yelling at our kids, maybe squawking,
shutting down,
spanking our kids,
stonewalling,
shutting down, leaving the room, whatever is our coping mechanism, you know, placating the child. Okay, you can have the ice cream, just make the crying stop. whichever of those we fall into, we can still have that if we're just tired or hungry or hangry. And then we call that being flooded. So the actual experience is the same, but the triggering comes from trauma background.
I find that super fascinating. I love being very specific with words. And that's good to know that triggering actually has something to do with like PTSD and trauma and stuff like that, because we throw things around so casually that then we lessen the importance of what's actually happening.
Yeah, definitely.
So how do you know? Is it just your body's response to a situation that we know what's happening? How do we know if we're being triggered or flooded?
Yeah, that's a really important question. And I think most parents start by noticing, you know, I said something to my kid, I did something to my kid, and now I feel guilty or ashamed about it.
Okay.
And that's where we can have a pretty good indicator that you are probably not acting in a way that's aligned with your values in that moment.
Okay, so it's something you reflect on post-experience.
That's where most people start noticing it, right? When it seems as though it comes out of nowhere, there's no way to stop it when it's happening. And when we start paying attention to this, it's like, oh yeah, that really crummy thing happened and I shouldn't have done it. And I know I shouldn't have done it. I can't do anything differently. Maybe I'm going to apologize to my child. And so they start seeing it after the fact. But one of the things I've seen through really helping thousands of parents understand this better is that you can see these things coming if you can learn to pay attention to your body signals, right? So your body is telling you throughout the day when things are not right for you. So maybe you're sitting, you just sat down to breakfast and your child says, "Mama, can I have the green spoon instead of the pink one?" and you're hungry, you're just settled, you're relaxed, and all of a sudden there's this tension in your shoulders.
Yep.
Right? Or tightness in your throat or
the
headache.
My jaw clenches.
Okay. Yeah. Jaw is a huge, huge sign of sight of tension. And so we just, we say, okay, fine. And then we get up and we get it. But that built up a little something in us, right? And then the kids are poking at each other and that builds up something a little more.
Or they're touching you and you didn't want to be touched.
Yes. And it feels like your body bubble has mm-hmm. been invaded. And then they refuse to put their shoes on to leave the house. And all of these things are building. And we notice that tension building if we can learn to pay attention to it. And then that is how we can start to interrupt the cycle so that we're not looking at it from the back all the time. And, oh, my goodness, this happened again, but actually doing something differently.
So how do you learn to pay attention to those body signals? Like so often, I think I remember, especially early on in motherhood, I would just go through the day in like a hyper vigilant survival mode of like mm-hmm. trying to catch all the balls. Like I wasn't really ever checking in with myself. I was always like focused on my kid.
Yeah. And that's the important point, right? They weren't your balls. They were the kids' balls.
Ching, ching.
Yeah. So I think that training, I mean, that we've had that training throughout our lives. So throughout our lives, we've been told to ignore our bodies. It's just reinforced into every aspect of our culture. That anything that's worthwhile happens in your head, and anything from the neck down is kind of irrelevant at best and useless at worst. So
yeah, we all want to be computers.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We want to be logical. We want to be rational. Right. That's our patriarchal
society. More efficient, more productive.
Exactly. Yeah. All of those quote unquote masculine qualities are prized, and all of the intuition, the body based understanding is seen as quote unquote feminine and is therefore not valued. So when we were children, we knew how to do this, right? Our children know when they're hungry. They know when they're tired. Sometimes they have a hard time navigating. What do I do with that information?
Right.
But they know. And through the course of interacting with the world around us, with our parents, we learn to stuff those needs, those feelings down, right? When our parents said, "Oh, come on, just take one more bite. You've hardly eaten anything." And we were full. And we're forced to take this one more bite, right? I mean, that's a classic.
We had
example.
A clean plate club at our house.
Yeah. Yes. And what an honor it was to be.
I mean, or there's starving kids in Africa if you don't eat that last bite.
And so is it now harder to understand whether or not you're full or hungry?
Absolutely. Now that I pause, like I have to intentionally put my fork down. Like I've trained myself to eat slow, to notice.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one tiny example, right? Of where we learn this stuff in our childhood and how it shows up now. And these examples operate throughout our lives. And so when we realize that, it's like a whoa.
Like big light bulbs turn on.
Yeah. And then there are practices that we can do to help us pay attention to ourselves throughout our days so that we're continually checking in. How am I doing? Do I have a need right now that isn't being met? Can I take a step to meet that need so that we're operating from a more regulated basis more of the time and less likely to explode? And also we see it coming, right? We see the tension in our shoulders, in our throat, in our jaw, wherever it is for us. And we notice, oh, something's not right here. I need to take a pause. My body bubble's being invaded right now. I'm going to stand up so that my body bubble is safe. So and take that step so that we're not getting to that point where we're exploding at our children.
Okay, so before we learn about how to be proactive about it, what do we do after we've exploded?
So I think there's so much guilt and shame wrapped up in this, right? It's like, can I just forget that this happened? Can I pretend that it didn't happen? If I pretend it didn't happen, will my child forget about it? You're grinning at me like it's never
like,
ever happened.
Like if they don't mention it again, can we just not?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, can we forget about it? And I'm wondering if you think back to your childhood, if maybe there's an incident that seemed really big to you and your parent just kind of didn't really address it again.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I bring up every Thanksgiving, right? It's the one I bring up. I push the bear like, hey, do you remember that one time?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's still there for you, right?
Right.
It's still unresolved. It still hurts. And that's what happens when we don't come back to it. When we can come back to it and repair with our child and even apologize and say, I'm so sorry that that happened. And tell the story of what happened with our child, right? I was in the shower and we were getting ready to go to grandma's house and I came out of the shower and you must have found the glitter we were playing with yesterday and all of a sudden there was glitter all over the floor and I yelled so loud and I'm so sorry. And we're pausing throughout that to hear our child's version of the story if they have something they want to add. So we're kind of co-telling this story together. And that process really helps the child to integrate what happened so that it's not this thing that you bring up every flipping Thanksgiving for the rest of your life.
Because we have repaired. I'm sure my mom's like, we should do this because she's going to listen to this episode. And then she's going to be like, so Christy.
It seems like we have something to talk about. Yeah, and what you will probably find is, I mean, this is what, decades later?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 40 and this happened when I was like 10, I think. Yep.
Yeah, that poking it every Thanksgiving is not healing. It's not repairing.
No.
But that if you come back to this in a not stressful time and just say, hey, this is what that was like for me. And maybe your mom says, hey, this is what that was like for me. And also I see your perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I can see how it was for you. And, are we still seeing this pattern? Obviously, you know, you wouldn't be having this conversation with your young child, but now that you're much older, are we still seeing this play out in our relationship in some way? Is there a request I would like to make of you to be different? Or is there something I'm going to do differently in our relationship so that we're really repairing that? And then what you may well find is next Thanksgiving, this is not a thing anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. So it sounds like we can use the strategy of co-telling that story with any age of person. Like if I feel flooded with my spouse and react poorly, or a best friend even, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a parent-child relationship to use
this
strategy
with. No, it really
doesn't.
No, I mean, I did this yesterday with my husband. my daughter's just learned how to make crepes herself.
Ooh.
And so I was doing work already. She is trying to follow this recipe that she's just about reading by herself. And so I'm kind of back and forth in between working and helping her. And my husband thought we were done. He comes in, why is the stove still on?
Yep.
And I'm like, because I'm still using it. And so, you know, there was a little bit of back and forth there. And then just a few minutes later, I said, I'm sorry, I snapped. And he said, I'm sorry too. And I said, I was having a hard time because I was multitasking, which is always, always a recipe for what we call narrow window of tolerance.
Okay.
it narrows the window that you have to work within where everything feels calm and regulated. So my window of tolerance was already narrow and it didn't take much to push me outside of that. And so, yeah, I explained to him, I was helping her. I was doing my own thing and I could manage that. And when you came in, it was too much for me to take on. And so parents with very young children may think, well, how do I do that with a 2-year-old?
Right.
You just provide more of the story and you provide opportunities for them to say yes, or to move towards you, or to non-verbally acknowledge that, yeah, that's what happened. And that's how I see it too. So that you can do this even with pre-verbal, non-verbal children.
So it sounds like almost like watching a Daniel Tiger episode and narrating something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I confess I have not seen a lot of Daniel Tiger, but I'm familiar with the spirit of it. And yeah, it's that same sort of calm, gentle, understanding, mutual understanding of what's happened.
That's really helpful. And it's good to know that you can use it with all ages of human, from pre-verbal to, you know, parents of adult children and adults and all the relationships.
Yeah. And I guess if I could add to that, I think the most important part of it is coming in with a non-judgmental observation, Ooh. Right? So when you go to your mom and say, hey, mom, can we talk about this? It's not, hey, mom, can we talk about that time when you really screwed things up when I was 10?
Or that time you have to when come with
you did dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. You have to approach it like that time you're an alien in the room, sort of.
Yeah. we're not judging the thing our child did, the thing our partner or parent did, but we're trying to really present it in neutral language. Hey, can we talk about the hard time that we had this morning? Or what happened this morning? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you need to be a little more specific to tell them what it is, that's fine. But, if you come in with, you know, can we talk about why you always or you never or.
Yeah, those words don't help a conversation.
No.
Always, no, never. Are there other words that are important to leave out that are like easy for you to rattle off?
Those are big ones in opening. I think one place where I really see parents stumble when they start the conversation is the phrase, I feel like. Because when you put the like after I feel, what almost always comes out is another judgment, right? I feel like you're not appreciating me. I feel like you're not pulling your weight. And so it's that like that really trips us up. Whereas if we can instead say, I feel, then the next word that actually comes out is going to be a feeling.
Yeah.
Right? I feel hurt. I feel dysregulated. Mm-hmm. And so that helps us to convey something about what we're feeling without that judgment sneaking in.
Without trying to put a story on them.
Yes, yes, and make it out to be the other person's fault. And if you would just change your behavior, right? When we're talking about triggers,
yeah,
people, parents are like, if my child wouldn't do that thing, then I wouldn't need to explode.
Well, yeah, obviously that works in my marriage too. If my husband wouldn't do that thing, like we wouldn't argue about this. Like it would be solved.
Yeah, yeah. If you would just change, then all of our lives would be easier.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can only control ourselves, which is part of the proactive part of this. So let's go to the proactive part. How do we help ourselves be flooded less? You were talking about needs and noticing needs and things like that.
Yeah, that's really at the crux of it. And before we get to the crux of it, I think one of the most important parts is recognizing this is in us, right? My triggered feelings are in me. They're not really so much to do with the thing that you or my child or whoever is doing. And so if we're trying to get our child to change their behavior, we may be successful in doing that and it may help, but chances are they're going to start doing something else that pokes our buttons.
After parenting for 16 years, the thing just changes. It morphs into something else, right? Like my kid who used to only meow when she was mad doesn't only meow now. She has another reaction that feels just like chalk the same way.
Yes. Yeah. So you can play whack-a-mole and you can get them to change their behavior on stopping meowing. And then something else pops up and you're continually whack-a-moling and nobody wants to be whacked. No. So, so really the key is to learn to pay attention to our bodies. And so let's give a really brief practice that parents can do anytime, right? So, let's right now just kind of take a breath, pause for a moment, and you can actually open your eyes and look at something in your immediate environment. Okay. Doesn't matter what it is. I would suggest it's not something with writing on it.
Okay.
Because that makes it harder to focus on the actual thing. And just focus on looking at that thing, how the light shines on it, what its shape is, its texture.
Mm-hmm.
Trace the outline with your eyes. See the different colors. Just focusing on looking really closely and examining every aspect of that thing. Okay. And what's different now than it was before?
My body feels quieter and I don't have any active thoughts.
Right. Yeah. There's no, oh my goodness, if my kid doesn't learn to dot, 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 then they will never be able to dot, dot, dot. There's no catastrophizing, none of the things I should be doing. I'm failing at doing is quiet mind. And so what can we do with that quiet mind? We can check in with ourselves and say, hey, how am I doing right now? Am I feeling anything? Am I feeling my jaw pain,
right?
That my clenching, that means that something isn't quite right here. am I feeling tightness in my shoulders, headache? Am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Do I need to get a drink? What need do I have right now that isn't being met? And can I take a step towards meeting that need?
And this was part of the big conversation last time that was like a huge aha for me. Mm. And this is why I wanted to make sure we had this conversation again, was the fact that it may be hard for a parent to, a mother in particular, to identify what needs are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that having needs is just part of being human. Yeah. And, that moms are still human, right? Like we're mothering, yes, and raising humans while being a human. And we have to, yeah, let ourselves be human.
Yeah. Despite all of society's messages that we should give everything to our children and not have any needs ourselves, particularly if we're female identifying and we're supposed to manage the emotional climate of the family, mm-hmm, and our needs come last. Yeah. And so when we're starting to think about our needs, most parents I work with end up latching onto a strategy, right? Like, mm-hmm, my strategy is I want 30 minutes to myself right now, or I want to walk outside.
Right.
And if we can back that up to the level of needs, what is the real need that's underlying this, right? If I want 30 minutes to myself, is it I'm looking for quiet? Is it that I am interested in learning something and I want to read while I'm in my 30 minutes by myself? What is actually underneath, yeah, that? And you can find needs lists online. Sometimes they can be long and a bit overwhelming. So when I work with parents, I tend to shorten them down into the most common needs that parents face. And really when we look for that need, we find, oh yeah, I could be in my room by myself right now, or I could actually be out in the living room while my kids play nearby and listening to a podcast. So, there are always many, many, many ways to meet a need.
And I've experienced this during my husband's deployments, that I realized I needed movement, mm-hmm, but movement was hard to get without childcare being readily.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had to figure out like, oh, I could do yoga in the middle of the playground,
yes,
and stand in a tree pose and practice balance things and be okay with, yes, that. That while my kids were at the playground, I could do something for me.
Yeah.
And still be, yeah, safe with them.
Yeah. And if your strategy was, I have to go for a run.
Yeah.
Then it seems like there's no way to meet that need, to meet our child's need for play and joy and time outside.
Right.
And our need to, for movement. But when what you did was you saw that underlying need and you said, what are some of the many ways that I can meet that need? And you found one that can meet your child's need and your need at the same time.
Yeah, it takes work.
It does. It's a little harder in the beginning because we're so used to latching onto strategies. But once you get the switch,
yeah,
what really is my need right now, then having so many options to meet that need opens up worlds of possibility. Because when your children are doing things that are driving you up the wall, they're doing it to meet one of their needs. And we can almost always help them to meet one of their needs in a way that doesn't drive us up the wall.
I think that's a light bulb moment. Can you say that one more time very clearly?
So when our children are doing things that are driving us up the wall, they're doing it because it's trying to meet a need of theirs. So they're jumping on the couch. They're doing whatever you've told them to do 500 times that you don't like them doing. They're doing it to, not because they want to jump on the couch, but to meet a need for maybe joy and play and movement.
Yeah.
So when we see that underlying need, we can say, okay, is there another way that I can help you to meet that need? Maybe our couch is pretty fragile. So, but you can jump on the bed. The bed is fine. The bed is not going to collapse. So you can meet your need for joy and play and movement, and I can meet my need for respect for our property. And lo and behold, I don't get in a big tizzy about it. Yeah.
That's really important to be able to, yeah, pause, but it's like, that's something you had to work on in the moment, right? Like,
well, where it comes from is being aware of seeing it coming, right? We talked about re-regulating, mm-hmm, throughout our days, taking these little pauses so that we're not operating at this high sort of level of tension.
The level of high threat.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're bringing that down so that we are more able to regulate ourselves throughout the day. And then when our child starts to jump on the couch, we can pause. And instead of, I told you yesterday not to jump on the couch, we can pause and say, this feels hard. And that's not an overnight kind of practice, right? There's going to be plenty of times when we think to ourselves, oh yeah, I should pause in this moment. Stop jumping on the couch.
Yep.
And we can't see until afterwards, oh, I did it again. And that to me is one of the hardest periods, because it's like, I know what I want to do and I just can't do it.
Yeah.
But if we keep focusing on it, we keep practicing, we create that little mini pause. Mm-hmm. And from there, we take a breath. And then I'm thinking, why is this hard for me? What need am I trying to meet? What need is my child trying to meet? Is there a way we can meet both of our needs? Yeah. And we can even have conversations with our children once we get more used to this, of where they can tell us what their needs are and come up and help us to come up with ways to meet both of our needs.
So what are the most common needs that parents don't recognize that they have?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm actually writing a book on the intersection of parenting and social justice. and it's about how the ways that we interact with our children affect the ways that our children go out and be in the world. And the concept that I thought of to help parents understand this is what I call the needs cupcake.
Okay.
So if you imagine a cupcake, it's got a cherry on top, and then there's some frosting and a cupcake underneath. And if we actually start with our child's needs, some of our child's most common needs might be safety, mm-hmm. and movement and connection with us, right? The 3 to 5 that form that cherry.
Yeah.
That when our child is dysregulated, we can look at those cherry needs and think, okay, are their cherry needs met? And then, okay, if we see one that isn't met, we try and meet that. If it seems like the cherry needs are met, we look to the frosting. What are the next 3 to 5 needs that they mm-hmm. often have? And if those are met, then we look at the whole rest of the list. So what that does is means that we're not trying to look at a list of 50 needs and say, well, which one is it, for goodness sake?
Oh, yeah, that's too much.
Yeah, it's the same 3 to 5, the same 3 to 5, and then consider a broader list. And so when our children are looking for joy, play, connection with us, and often autonomy, where that often butts up with us is when we have a need for ease and collaboration, right?
Yep.
I want my child to work with me on this. I want to feel as though we're on a team together and it's not me trying to get them to do something. And I want to feel more ease, for goodness sake. Mm-hmm. And so what that helps us to do is to see, okay, when I can help my child meet their needs for joy and play and movement, connection and autonomy, right? They get to actually make real decisions about their lives. My needs for ease and collaboration get met as well as a byproduct of meeting their needs. And then my life gets easier.
I love that ease can be a need. And that was mind-blowing to me. Like, I remember last time we talked, I texted a friend right away. I was like, do you believe it? Like, is ease actually a need? Like, I had to really wrestle with the idea that ease could be a need.
Right, because our culture says that anything worth doing is going to be hard in some
way. We do hard things, yeah. Like,
yes,
all the slogans.
We can do hard things.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's not hard, you're not pushing yourself enough.
Yeah, all the good things are hard in life.
Yes, yeah. It's not true.
Yeah, I really wrestled last time we talked about that. And so it's interesting to me. So if anyone else is struggling with the idea of ease, like getting out the door, I want to be easy.
Right.
But like the idea that other parts, that ease could show up in other ways, is important to note.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
So I have a challenge that I would love for you to coach me on.
Sure.
Because this is what you do best. You shine here. So what do I just explain what happened, or do you want to coach?
Give me a few sentences on roughly what happened, and then I can ask more questions.
Okay. So my child was really struggling and asked me to help advocate for her and collaborate some other options. Mm-hmm. And so I worked with other adults that she was nervous to talk to, and got a second option for her to choose from. And then she said she didn't want it anymore.
Okay. So can you tell me what's the struggle and what are the options?
So the struggle was she was struggling in one of her extracurricular classes and she wanted to know if there was a choice she could make for a second semester, right? Like, was there an option to make this easier for her because she didn't feel safe or respected in this class?
Okay. Wow. And did she use those words, safe and respected?
She definitely used the word respected. Like, she didn't feel like the teacher was a respectful person. He right. felt demeaning.
Okay. It's slight judgment creeping in there.
But. Yeah. Yep, you're right.
I feel like you're demeaning me. but she didn't feel safe. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's
like huge she had tried understand. To communicate and she just felt like she wasn't being heard in any way.
Wow.
So she asked for help.
Yeah. And how old is she?
16.
Okay.
So she all is right. older. But, okay. I mean, these sort of situations come up from all sorts of things with our kids.
They do, yeah. And so for parents who have younger children, you know, your child is not necessarily going to come and say, I don't feel respected in my extracurricular class and I want to know what options I have. They may just act out.
Right? Uh-huh. They may just say they don't want to go there. So we were picking up on her body language the night before this class. When this class would come up on her schedule, that the night before, she was an angsty person.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great that you're paying attention to her body language and that's helping her to pay attention to her body language as well. And you could even tell her, you know, I noticed that you were walking around the house and your shoulders were tight or whatever it was. And so that she can see, oh yeah, when I feel that sensation in my shoulders, that means something isn't right for me. And I can ask for help in getting that need met. Yeah. So how was she feeling when she was explaining that to you, do you think? And how was she feeling about the class?
So I think she was frustrated when she got what the other option would be.
Okay. And what are the options, just so that we can...
Oh, she could either continue in the class or move it to... an online scenario where she's stuck in a boring classroom with new kids she doesn't know again.
Right. Okay. Okay. So she's
frustrated. Both options felt bad to her.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So she's feeling frustrated, maybe a little overwhelmed as well.
Probably.
All right, if our need for respect is not being met, it can feel overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, there's a teacher in the scenario as well, and we don't know how they're feeling and what their needs are.
Right.
It's possible that it's a big class and they're struggling to convey all the ideas they're supposed to convey, and their need for competence in being a good teacher is not being met.
Right.
And that's why they're using this language or whatever was happening that your daughter was receiving as a lack of respect. I'm also curious about what was coming up for you when your daughter is describing this to you.
Well, on some level, I was surprised that she thought she could have a change. There was this old school kind of like, are you sure? Like, we can just suck it up. It's not that many more days.
Yeah.
And then the other reaction when she didn't like the B choice that was given was like, I've wasted all my time. Like, I put my neck out and I made so many phone calls here. You've wasted my time now.
Okay. Yeah. So frustration from you as well then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any anger there about wasting all that time and energy and effort?
Embarrassment, egg on my face, right? Like more of a like, ugh, I asked for a favor and I knew it was an unusual request. And now you're just gonna like make, I have to go say, no, we don't want it.
Yeah. Okay. Super. Okay. And so we identified a couple of her needs already. She wants to feel safe. She wants to feel respected.
Wants ease, I think.
Ease, like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And also some sense of connection with others, right? Because you mentioned that the online class wasn't going to work.
Yeah, because that was like the, but I do have a friend in that one class. Like this one person who I barely talk to in that class might be mad at me later.
Okay. And then maybe also a need for learning, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what the class is. Does she like the class and what she's learning?
No, it's just one of the things that you have to do sort of classes.
Okay. So there are needs in there as well, yep. right? Maybe for grade point averages and there are
right,
needs for
yeah.
you in there.
You don't
want
to, right. And that was where the challenge came up, was there was a missing assignment that she couldn't get erased and it ended up as an incomplete. And then she couldn't mm-hmm. advocate for herself, mm-hmm. Because the person wasn't listening. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where it all started.
Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I'm getting a flashback to our previous conversation where we talked about procrastination.
Yes.
Yes. And how hard it has been for you to navigate procrastination
yes.
in your life.
Yes. I proudly wave the, I'm a type B person. I'm going to roll with the punches and I'll do it in the mm-hmm. crunch. But how I don't want my kids to live in that stress point.
Right. Yeah, because there's so much shame in being perceived as a procrastinator, mm-hmm. as somebody who can't get it together on time, do yep. the required work. Yeah. And so you're trying to protect your child from experiencing that hurt and shame.
Yes. And then inner judgment of like, everyone else can do it.
Yeah. This is a flaw on my behalf mm-hmm. and something I have to fix. Yeah. So all of that is there.
Absolutely.
As we're talking
there are
about,
so many layers,
yeah.
Jen.
Yeah. And it seems like it should be so simple. Like just take the flipping class, for goodness sake. It's only a few
yeah.
more sessions. Why
yeah.
is it
like
a big
just
deal?
Come on, man. Yeah. You never have to yeah. take this class again. Just.
Yeah. And if we don't identify all of our needs in this situation, then it's much harder to find a solution that actually works. Mm-hmm. Because if, like, for example, if we had not talked previously and I had not suddenly had the flash of recollection about procrastination and that was there, but it wasn't acknowledged,
right.
then we might come up with a potential solution. And you might even think, yes, that will work. And you try it. And then the procrastination thing is still there underneath and
yep.
that need isn't met. And it's like, this doesn't work. This sucks. my need is not being met. And I don't really know why, because I don't know what my need is, but I just know this isn't working.
Yep.
So that's why it's so important to firstly work at the level of needs. And secondly, to really get as many of them out on the table as we can. And you don't have to tell your child right now all the ways that procrastination has made your life hard, right? That could
yeah.
be a different conversation if you choose. But you have to be honest with yourself that it's there.
Yeah.
And then you can actually work towards finding solutions that work for both of you. So you may be somewhat constrained in this, in that there's a third party involved. If it's a situation
yeah.
with just you and your child, there's
right.
many more options available on the table.
Right. And that's where
party,
some of the stress came from, right? Was
yeah.
pushing up
yeah.
against an authority figure for
yeah.
both of us and asking
yeah.
that other person for help.
Yeah. And so one thing you could have done is before you go and ask for help is to really think about what are our needs in this situation, and is the proposal that we're making here actually going to meet both of our needs?
Mm-hmm.
So if we had thought in advance, oh, we could take this online course, then maybe your child then would have said, but none of my friends are in that online class and it'll be really boring. And that's not going to meet my need for connection and collaboration.
Right.
So then we might have known in advance that that's not going to work for us. And maybe we could have surfaced a different potential option that actually could meet our needs. In this particular situation, given that it's already halfway through and there's somebody else involved in it, it's possible we're not going to find a solution that meets everybody's needs. And at that point, we're acknowledging that and we're
mm-hmm.
saying, okay, what is the solution that meets most of our needs that we can work towards and that
yep.
we can acknowledge? Yeah, I have an unmet need here. I'm going to take this online class. It's not meeting my need for connection. I'm going to meet my need for connection in some other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to, right after this class, I'm going to make sure that I schedule time to chat with a friend so that, the friend who's in the in-person
mm-hmm.
class.
Yeah.
And maybe I can meet my need for connection that way. Yeah. So that the option that you choose does not have to be the perfect option.
Right.
But that it can meet as many of our needs as possible. And then we can look for other ways to meet our other needs. Just like you did the yoga in the playground as a different way, a different strategy for meeting your need for movement than going for a run.
Cause there's probably very rarely the perfect option that happens.
It's much more likely when there's just the two of you, and because then you can genuinely be open to a much wider variety
super,
of options.
Yeah. Yeah.
When there's an authority figure and a defined structure, like a company that operates uh-huh. in a certain way, and you're asking for special favors, then it starts to get harder. Yeah.
That's good.
But you
to
always
know.
Have options.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, I think, that was my, I think, motivation to try to, once I got over the suck it up attitude, I was, well, I really do want her to learn how to advocate here mm-hmm. and to know that if we don't ask, it's already a no, mm-hmm. that there might be an option. And after she wrestled with it and, she had a conversation with my husband who pointed out her need for ease and how angsty she is. He asked her to consider all the options and she did end up choosing the online option. And so we'll see how it rolls out, but there was a moment of like, I can't believe you did this to me. And then I had to take a deep breath and not explode on her because I wanted her to ask for help.
Yeah. So that's huge progress for you, right? That you saw that moment. You saw your brain going into all uh-huh. these unhelpful thoughts that were catastrophizing how hard her life is going to be mm-hmm. because she's never going to figure out how to advocate for herself. And you didn't lecture her.
No, but she pointed out my tone of voice. So that also helped, right? With bigger kids, I remember mm-hmm. teaching my little kids how to do that too. They would have a code word for me when mom sounded grumpy. Yeah. And so now they're used to pointing out when mom doesn't notice how she's sounding.
That's awesome.
That's so cool. It doesn't feel awesome in the moment when you're reminded that you don't sound how you want to sound.
Yes. But it's an incredible source of information to mm-hmm. hear, Mom, I'm perceiving this in a way that is feeling hurtful to me.
Yeah.
Even if you're not intending that.
Yeah.
Like, and that gives you a moment.
What that child perceives as yelling is nowhere what I would ever consider yelling.
Yes. Yeah.
Which took a long time to get to.
Yeah, it's not the volume, it's the hardness, right, mm-hmm. in your voice that they're responding to. And sometimes the word comes out is, you're yelling at me. And you're like, I'm not yelling at you. Wait till you're yelling.
That is the circle we've been in, absolutely.
Yeah, but they perceive it in that way that's difficult for them to receive. And then uh-huh. they're not listening to your words. They're not listening to your lecture about how they need to get on top of this. They're uh-huh. completely disengaged to protect themselves, just like you disengaged mm-hmm. to protect yourself when your parents lectured you about this. So having that code word between you is so important to interrupt that and use it as a cue to pause, breathe, reconnect. What are my values? What are my needs here? How can I help you meet your needs and meet our needs as well?
I am so thankful that you realized you had no parenting intuition. Like, I know that feels odd to say, but both conversations
in the spirit
and
in
listening to your podcast, like, I have picked up on things and I'm like, oh, because of her open-mindedness of trying to figure this out, I see this in a different way instead of just going with my assumptions here. And so I just want to tell you thank you, Jen.
Thanks. Yeah, it's something I've been leaning into. We were chatting before the show that I very recently have an autism self-diagnosis and I've been talking about it on the podcast and somebody reached out to me recently and said, you know, I knew you were autistic when I started listening, sort of the deep dives into the research and the willingness to buck the norms and characteristics of all my favorite people. And so I think that's a real gift to see how things could be different mm-hmm. from the way that we were raised. And it's sort of my passion to help parents see, oh yes, this really can be different and here's how to do it.
I'm just so thankful. So your podcast is called Parenting Mojo.
Your Parenting Mojo.
Mojo. Okay. And where else can they find you online, Jen?
Yeah, so Your Parenting Mojo is really where most stuff flows through. I am on social media. I'm not very good at social media. but I do have a resource for your listeners because I know that one of the most common reasons that parents feel triggered is because their child doesn't listen to them. And so I have a free cheat sheet called 13 Reasons Why Your Child Doesn't Listen and What to Do About Each One that really walks you through a lot of the tools that we've talked through here today. And that's available for free.
Awesome.
And it's at yourparentingmojo.com/keepcalmmotheron.
Awesome. Thank you. And and every episode here wraps up with a self-care idea and a family fun idea. So what are you doing for self-care right now, Jen?
For self-care, we are actually very much leaning into being outdoors, doing new things that my daughter's interested in. And right now she's very much interested in mushroom hunting.
Awesome.
She doesn't like to eat the mushrooms, but she likes to find them. And very often I get poison oak. So then that's fun afterwards as well. But there's something about being outdoors with your eyes scanning the ground that very much feels the same way I think that you experienced when you were looking at the object in front of you.
Yeah.
So it's a very grounding practice.
Awesome. Is that your family fun too, just being outside and exploring?
Yeah, yeah. And being present with each other, right? So many of the struggles we have happen when we're multitasking, when we're trying to do more than one thing at once. And so I think the way that we try to have fun with each other is really do one thing at a time. And when we do that, even just hanging out in the house becomes more fun as well.
Absolutely. When we can give our full attention to someone, it feels like a real gift.
It feels like a gift because it is a gift.
Well, thank you. And thank you for helping me figure out needs again. Like I said, last time we recorded this, I went and had like a major chat fest over text message. Like, I can't believe this. Like, you should go check out her blog and her podcast. And what do you think about this idea? And my friends were like, yeah, that's obvious, or no. So I can't wait to hear how people receive the idea that moms have to be human. All parents get to have needs. And it's really important to start with, what do you need?
It's the key to everything. It really is.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Christy. It's great to be here.
I hope you go check out Jen's podcast. And don't forget to listen and leave her a rating and review, along with leaving Keep Calm Mother On a rating and review. You are exactly the right mom for your kids, even if it doesn't feel like it. And I hope you have a good enough day.